And what's going on, everybody? This is Frankie here. Today I'm with Andres and with Donkeytron in the studio.
Yeah, what's up?
Everybody safely at home, staying safe. Hope everybody watching from their home is staying safe as well. And thanks again for joining us for Football on Full Heel. Once again, this is an all-German edition of Football on Full Heel because the Bundesliga is the only thing on right now. Big match that we had today. We had a couple of entertaining matchups in the Bundesliga this last weekend. And then today was Der Klassiker. I don't think that sounded as good as I wanted it to come off. But big match today that we're going to talk mostly about, or for most of the show, rather, before we give you our picks. Now, Johnny, who unfortunately is not here right now, he might be coning us in a little bit, actually won the picks last week. He predicted 3 out of a possible 4.
Oh, wow.
You and I both got 2, Andres. It was pretty close. It was pretty close, but
there were some surprising matches this week with results.
Yep, but Johnny took the crown for last weekend at least. I stopped adding I didn't add the last two to the total tally because, first of all, the tally I have at Rafa's at the studio, so we haven't been in the studio in a while. And then also, this has just been weird. And who knows if and when it can all stop. You never know, right? God forbid that more tests come out or something happens and maybe it all comes to a screeching halt again. So we'll just do it weekly until things return to some sort of normal. But yeah, Johnny, good looking out, bro. Good stuff. Luckily he's not here to talk shit about it.
Not yet.
But he definitely made the bold picks and called 3 out of 4. 75%, not bad. Elsewhere in the world, before we break down Der Klassiker and look at the Bundesliga's duration, Project Restart is what I like to call it. I think others have taken to calling it as well. But elsewhere in Europe, the Premier League is now saying they are unlikely to return by June 12th. A couple weeks ago, the government in the UK said that they can start playing in June. Then a couple days later, they put out the June 12th or 13th date. Now they're saying it probably won't happen by June 12th. So keep checking in with us. Keep checking in with your favorite football sources or whatever websites you follow, because it's going to change day by day in the Premier League. It's also where we're seeing the most pushback from players. Troy Deeney, I think we talked about a little bit last week, said his newborn son has breathing issues and he's not trying to put him or his son or his family at risk. N'Golo Kante tested negative for it already, but he's got a family history of some underlying health conditions, so he's not trying to risk it. And there's reports of Chelsea players being fully behind his decision. So really interesting situation brewing there where the clubs are going ahead and pushing ahead. There's a lot of money on the line, obviously. And even some clubs' existence is on the line. Some of these smaller Premier League clubs and a lot of these smaller but historic clubs in the lower leagues don't have that match day revenue, don't have that merchandise revenue maybe. And it's going to affect a lot of things there in Europe. So keep your eye on that situation. Keep your eye on this space right here on Full Heel. La Liga is supposed to start on – well, before I talk about La Liga, how do you feel about the situation in England or players like Deeney and Kante not going to training on this? Are you supportive of this?
Yeah, I mean, you got to support, you know, how players feel about their safety. I think they did the first round of testing, and what do they have, like nine positive cases, 6 to 9 or something like that?
Yeah.
What surprised me was that they did a second round, and you still had a couple cases. So I think there were, you know, I think that was a red flag for them saying, you know, look, we tested once, and here we are, you know, trying to keep doing the tests, and we're getting some positive test back. So I mean, that's a little alarming for them to restart so soon. But I mean, if the players don't feel safe, they have families too. I mean, yeah, they're they're here for, you know, they're getting paid millions to play, but you got to think about what they're going through, their families, and same situation as us. So, I mean, N'Golo Kante has his whole team supporting him, so I don't see why players would feel like, you know, exercised from not playing.
Yeah, and in the case of Deeney, too, like you said, the Premier League had at least 10 positives in that initial round, and one of his teammates, a defender, Mariapa, was one of the positives. So imagine him, a son who's vulnerable and a teammate who tested positive, like, totally, totally understandable. So completely understand this human decision, right? Humans before the game, right? But definitely makes the situation there interesting or more confusing. Toss-up. But yeah, elsewhere, the president of La Liga, Javier Tebas, is saying that they ideally would want to start on June 11th and not only start back on June 11th with La Liga, but start with the Sevilla Derby, which is Betis versus Sevilla there. So that's a nice, juicy matchup there to come back to La Liga. So fingers crossed, and hopefully they work it out. We've seen pictures of Barcelona players back in training. Messi shaving the beard, right? Looking like a young Messi, right? Not aging at all.
Yeah, he looks like the 2009 Messi when he was just taking 10 defenders at once on down the right wing.
Yeah.
I mean, you got Griezmann and a little ponytail. You got Ronaldo. I mean, elsewhere you got Ronaldo with, you know, some waves. You know, yeah, everyone's had the crazy quarantine hairstyle right now. But, I mean, Real Madrid, I mean, even their players, Hazard saying he's fully healed, Suarez. I mean, there's a lot of players that have been out there, you know, ready to come back as well. So hopefully they get their green light soon.
Yep, because things are close here. Barcelona's only 2 points up on Real Madrid down the stretch. We saw at Atletico, Joao Felix is injured, right? And that can be a big deal for them. And something that's a little bit alarming, too, that maybe we can talk about later, if not next week, probably next week. But the injuries, right? The number of injuries we've already seen in the Bundesliga is kind of alarming. Or like Knox, and you can just see that players are not in prime physical condition, right? Physical or, you know, just match condition.
Well, there were a lot of key injuries for the classic, you know, this week or today. A lot of players that couldn't make a match difference. Even during the game, they got injured. So, I mean, what's that to say about how fast we're coming back to football?
Yeah. And then we have Serie A also trying to return very close to La Liga. They're pushing for either June 13th or June 20th. So middle of June, which is right now about 3 weeks away, we're looking at football in Spain, calcio in Italy. So, again, some mild excitement there. I pause because, again, I'm excited, but you never know what can happen. It's a crazy time in history, so I wouldn't rule out something, some wild development, right? We'll keep you guys posted weekly on anything we hear about everything else, all the other efforts in major leagues to return. I think when we recorded last week, we were talking about La Liga MX potentially canceling. Now it's definitely confirmed that Liga MX has canceled the rest of their season. So they joined the ranks of France, the Netherlands, Belgium, the Scottish Premier League, host one or two others, right, of leagues that are just calling it. Serie A, too, before I move on, actually. They're also considering, either want to come back on the 13th or the 20th of June, but they're also floating a plan B where there's a playoff, and they could just halt things and then just do playoffs for those last couple of, Champions League spots for the title and for the, promotion relegation. Right. So, what do you think about that? First of all, I I'm glad that they have a plan B, right? So they have a plan, and then they have another contingency that they're floating. I know here in America, in on this side of the Atlantic, playoffs are fairly common, but it's not very common outside of tournaments in Europe. So what do you think about the prospect of Serie A or other leagues doing a playoff for those important spots and titles?
I don't know. I mean, playoffs are always exciting in terms of entertainment. It wouldn't take away from, you know, the integrity of the league. I'm sure whoever deserves to, you know, whoever was holding, you know, 1 through 5, 1 through 6 is a legitimate contender for their spot, whatever there is, champions or Europa. So if they're playing a one-off or, you know, a couple playoffs for first place, I wouldn't mind it. I know there are a lot of teams that are probably on board, especially if they're planning on eventually starting the new season maybe soon. We got France starting in August, or I think August is when they're trying to come back for their second, for the 2021 season. So
yep, they said August 21st is the date that's set for a new season in France.
Yeah, so if other leagues are already trying to get on with the next season and leagues are still playing catch-up, I'm sure playoffs is more than welcome by these clubs. I mean, even champions, I think, might come down to like a one-leg playoff just to get all those games in, you know, done in a couple weeks.
Yep. Yep, you took the words right out of my mouth. I was going to talk about how the champions, right, they're talking about one-legged affairs to decide the rest of it. So I was talking to a friend of the show, a fellow member of the Full Heel Network, Ryan, earlier, and we were talking about how all these champions and relegations and everything kind of have an asterisk to them, right? There's a, you know how they say in sports, right? There's an asterisk on the season, right? Around this win, right? But usually that has a negative connotation, right? Like, oh, hey, they won, but there's an asterisk because they cheated, right? Like a lot of people right now are saying the Houston Astros have an asterisk on that World Series, right? Because of the whole sign stealing thing in baseball. But this would be an asterisk in a kind of like, and not in a good way, but neutral. I don't know the right way to put it, but for example, the Premier League used to, when it started, was 22 teams, right? So for the goal scorers, leading goal scorers of those first couple seasons that had 22 teams, whenever it says they scored X amount of goals, it always has asterisk in a 22, you know, team league, right? Where there's a couple extra matches. So I think it would be a similar thing, right, where it wouldn't necessarily take away anything, right? It wouldn't be a negative, but it definitely has to be noted, right? It's definitely not normal circumstance. And in
I mean, case, yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off, but a playoff at least gives you a chance, you know, to kind of win your place, I guess, rather than it being voided or nulled or, you know, champion crown just based off, you know, 25 games, so... Definitely playoff is a lot better than, you know, voiding the season.
True. And again, as a lovers of the game, we will take whatever we can get, right? Oh, yeah. And even more on this side of the Atlantic Ocean in MLS, there we mentioned it maybe twice already, the possibility of doing a tournament in Orlando. At Disney, with all the teams kind of separated in their hotels and away from fans, obviously. So apparently that's picking up traction too. So that's a possibility. So again, the creativity is appreciated. I'm glad that people are looking for solutions. Hopefully it's all fair to everybody involved. Because I know for MLS, I heard talks about funky seating, like certain teams would be seated in ahead of other teams, and it just, to me, again, I didn't read too much into it, but it just sounded like some of it was possibly detrimental to some certain teams. But I'll have to look into it, and we can talk about it as it develops, because information about MLS leaked, and then like Don Garber, the commissioner of MLS, kind of like came out and denied it, and then told the owners and everybody in the league to stop leaking. And then that leaked. It was funny. So MLS has got some things that they're working through as well. Because I know they're talking to the players about pay cuts as well, too. So whole lot of question marks there too. The one place where we don't have too many question marks, Bundesliga. It's been back for a week now. This last weekend, we had some really, really good matchups. Bayern beat Frankfurt on Sunday in a pretty exciting match. Bayern went up 2-0, or 3-3. Yeah, it was 2-0 to none. 3-0, right. Sure. And then Frankfurt scored 2 off set pieces. And then it was 3-2, setting up a tense finish for Bayern before an own goal and some questionable defending on Alphonso Davies gave Bayern the 5-2 against Frankfurt. And then elsewhere, Dortmund didn't skip a beat over the weekend, at least. They beat Wolfsburg 2-0. Guerrero was on the score sheet again. Things were looking good, right? Leverkusen won over the weekend as well. Kai Havertz had another 2 goals. So in the last 3 matches, including the match that we'll talk about in a little bit today, he's got 4 goals in 3 matches. Not bad for the kid. But the biggest thing in the Bundesliga this last week was Der Klassiker, the Classico of Germany, right? Borussia Dortmund versus Bayern Munich. This time it was in Dortmund. Last time it was at Munich and Bayern blew them out. It was 4-0 the last time around. So before the match, we were all just hoping for something competitive, right? Since then, Dortmund has acquired Erling Haaland, right? Jadon Sancho is near the top of the charts in goal contributions in Europe, right? He's got 14 goals and like 16 assists, 17 assists, right? Something ridiculous. So it's a different Dortmund squad, and we were hoping for something competitive. And it finished 1-0 for Bayern. Oof. Now, empty stadium in Dortmund. We know that Dortmund sells out virtually every game. They have, I think, the highest average attendance in the big European leagues. How much do you think that factored into the match? I know we were joking and laughing about the soundtrack, right? They pump artificial crowd noise in for these Bundesliga matches to make the players and the people at home feel like it's a match.
Yeah, they had the whistles in for, you know, dirty fouls, or, you know, they had the noise going, you know, the whole match, which was interesting because I don't know if it made too much of a difference, but Dortmund had the best home record going into the game, and Dortmund had the best away record going into the game.
Bayern, yeah.
So, good. So it was, I don't know if that affected both teams at all, but I'm sure Bayern didn't feel like the home field advantage affected them too much. Another interesting stat was that Lewandowski had 41 goals in 35 matches, and Haaland had 41 goals in 35 matches. So those two were hyped up, you know, to even each other out in their classicals. So it was a hyped match, and I mean, right from the start, you felt the tension. I don't know if you want to start off from there, or how do you want to go about?
Well, yeah, it was very close for the most part, right? Right from the start, Dortmund threatened. I believe within the first 3 minutes, they had 2 shots on goal. One where Neuer was way out of the goal, right? And sure. I believe it was Boateng or Alaba. Somebody was right on the line to clear it. And Dortmund looked threatening from the start. And there were periods of the match where it went back and forth, right, where Dortmund was taking the more direct counterattacking route, which you and our boy Sun Caesar also pointed out in our group chat. They looked a little bit sloppy, right, because they were trying to transition a little too quickly, right, or mm-hmm. as Johnny was talking, maybe looked a little too hesitant, right, or even maybe scared or nervous for the occasion, right, because it's a big occasion. Bayern was in first place, Dortmund was in second. Now, before we talk more about Dortmund, let's just talk about Bayern because they're in first now, right? If I'm not mistaken, they're up to 57 points now, which is, I think my math might be wrong there.
They're 7 points up now.
They're 7 points up, right? Which I think might take them actually to 61. I have to look at the table again, but they're 7 points up on Dortmund. Now, you and I have slightly varying opinions or hold the Bayern team in different regards.
64. Yeah.
I'm sorry. And right. Welcome to the show, Johnny, right on cue. Oof, just in time for the good stuff. We just finished recapping when other leagues are coming back or potentially coming back and are just getting into the Dortmund-Bayern talk and how Bayern has 64 points. They're now 7 points up on Dortmund, which has 57. I was saying, John,
about the game.
Well, yeah, Andres and I go back and forth on how convincing Bayern is. For those of you who don't watch the show or don't or are new, Andres is standing Bayern hard. He thinks they're going to win the Champions League. I disagree a little bit. We'll get into specifics, but
pre-pandemic, I thought they had a really good shot.
They're making their case, but I don't know.
They won 1-0 off a, that's before anything else, a spectacular goal from Joshua Kimmich. A chippio, right? A little chipperoo from outside the box on Roman Berkey. He tried to swat it out, ended up knocking it into his net. Just a moment of class to really separate it. But other than that, do you think it was a convincing performance, Johnny? Is Bayern the outright?
I think it definitely kind of sealed the league for Bayern. They showed their pedigree, and they showed that they just have a better overall team depth-wise. I didn't get to see their defense get tested, kind of, how we've been pointing out, at least me and you. I've been impressed with their fullbacks, though. I think they got a lot of options with Pavard and Davis now, who just looks like he covers the ground so fast, you know?
The road runner.
When he needs to go back, he covers the ground really fast. But I expected a little more. The game wasn't bad, but it left me wanting a little bit more.
What about, Andres, maintain that this is convincing, right? This team is just on cruise control?
I mean, Bayern has two or three players per position. To start off, they have so many options. I mean, Boateng looked a little gassed, injured, you know, coming into the second half. They just replaced him with, you know, record signing Lucas Hernandez, you know. I mean, they had some players missing, Thiago, which, I mean, they missed, but they had Goretzka in there. You know, he made his case for the midfield. You have options. And Dortmund, I mean, you had a key injury in Haaland. I think once Haaland got injured, they really lost any, like, reference up top. They were just trying to get shots out, maybe crosses in, anything at that point. But if Bayern, you know, lose an option up top, you have a bunch of players that can come in. Perisic, you have Coutinho, who didn't even make the game. He's on the bench. So, I mean, a team like that, I don't even think they got into like second gear. They were tested in the beginning by, you know, the pressing and the intensity of Dortmund, but I don't think they were that tested. Like you guys mentioned, like I didn't see a lot from Dortmund. I expected more.
Yeah. And what you just said is usually my, not critique, but my biggest doubt and why I think Bayern can still be tested. Right. They do have depth. They do have people who can fill in, as we're seeing. Alphonso Davies, 19 years old, the young Canadian, was not even a left back. Just he had one play in particular where he lost the ball. He made a poor pass and then darted back and got it back and started another attack after with an impressive recovery speed. So my knock, again, is just kind of like, he's learning a new position. Alaba's playing at center back, and Alaba's great. He's versatile, but that's new for him. Benjamin Pavard has played well at right back, scored off a set piece a couple weeks ago. But to me, I feel like he looks and kind of plays like a center back. So, again, versatility is good, but I guess I'm leaning more towards it's of them being a little bit more inexperienced, right, versus them being versatile. Well,
I think the only reason Pavard is playing there is because Kimmich is filling in for Thiago, I want to say.
Today in the midfield, they had Goretzka, Kimmich, and who else did they have? Müller. Müller dropped back into the mid, right? And then they had...
No, it was someone else, isn't it?
No, they had Gnabry, Coman, and Lewandowski up top.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, but I think Kimmich is filling in for Thiago, who's still injured, I think. So technically, he would satisfy that right back role. If how you're saying Pavard is exposed or whatever. You get me?
Mm-hmm.
So they just got options, how Andres was saying, but I don't know. The game started off well for Dortmund, and then but that's what I kind of felt being at home, quote unquote, because there's no fans. Dortmund was kind of gonna try to give it to them, and Bayern just kind of waited, didn't panic too much. I think we pointed out Dortmund just lacks that like midfield maestro, because they played a 3-4-3, but Haaland looked lonely up top. And the midfield just, it seems like every time they get the ball, they're just looking for like Hakimi or Guerrero on the left to just kind of run up the sides and then try to center with Hazard and Brandt. But it just wasn't working, you know. It's a little bit too predictable. I think that's how they looked. And Bayern was just the better team.
Good segue, because my next question was what went wrong for Dortmund, right? And I think you just did a pretty good summary. But how much do you guys think not having Witzel there, not having Royce, not having Emre Can from the start, right, is the another big one that you had, right, Johnny, or Sancho?
Yeah.
So they didn't have much creativity, right, for a team who was a little bit sloppy in transition. They didn't have anybody linking that play effectively, right? Anything else? Do you think those absences were big? Or Sancho's just not healthy?
I think they got some of the moves wrong with the subs, because Can I think he's coming back from injury too, but he's a suitable replacement for like Witzel in the middle, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that they played their best game today, and it kind of, the sub was a little weird. They took out Brandt, who really had the team going. He was the only one really kind of sparking stuff, and Delaney was at least disturbing in the mid, you know, but they took both of them out. I was a little bit thrown off by that. I thought that number 8 guy for me wasn't doing much. What's his name?
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I just think he should have came off a lot sooner, but it's just Sancho. Yeah, looked visibly still injured. This was their chance though, and they just didn't have it. You know, I would say the league is sealed up for Bayern.
That leaves 6 matches left with 7 points on the table, and then there's a couple teams that still have to play tomorrow. Leipzig included, but even if Leipzig wins tomorrow, they'd be tied with Dortmund in second, 7 points behind. So 7 points for sure. Bayern is going to be up after this round of fixtures, right? So 7 in 6 matches. So a potential 18 points still to play for. So I would agree with you though, because again, even if you talk about the doubt that I may have in their inexperience, you guys pointed out, Andres said, they barely got out of second gear, right? They kept possession. They recycled it. Gnabry always looks dangerous, man. Serge Gnabry always looks dangerous. Davies looks a danger with that speed too, man. Mueller is back to his absolute best, because he's every time he touches the ball, He's it looks like he's about to provide an assist, or when he gets near it, he can score. So, and Lewandowski, right? It's I can go on for minutes about Lewandowski, right? So many goals in the season. So, I would agree with you that it's theirs to lose now, especially after Leverkusen lost today. Havertz didn't score again.
Your point.
And, And then Gladbach tied, which leaves them back as well. So now Leverkusen's in fifth, Gladbach's in fourth. And for the moment, Leipzig's in third. So it kind of looks like after this one, it's starting to thin out. The most contested and tightest race in Europe went from 5 points between first and fourth to now 11 points between, you know, first and, you know, fifth. So Bayern kind of asserting their dominance right now in these stages. So I guess checking with Andres, still the favorites for Champions League, if and when Champions League comes back? Clearly? Well,
Champs is a different monster. I mean, that depends who you get. I'm not too sure if after the restart they'll still be favorites. I'll have to see how everyone else is kind of playing in their respective leagues. But, I mean, they're a tough out. There's a lot of teams that are tough outs. But,
I mean,
you still have your same contenders every year. You have, you know, Madrid with superstars. You have Barca with superstars. Juve with superstars. So, I mean, it only takes those players, you know, Messi, you know, Ronaldo to make a difference in those games, which I feel like Dortmund don't have. I feel like their only player capable of doing that was probably Royce, Sancho, Haaland. I mean, those three guys were not even fit for this game.
The young Haaland, right, who, lest we forget, actually left this match early, right? He left injured, it looked like. Johnny said it looked like a hammy, right?
I didn't know what it was because I didn't see him. I guess he tried to get that ball that Sancho crossed, so it has to be some type of hammy or groin injury.
And Andres, you said that changed the complexion of the game too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, after that, they had no reference point. I don't even know who else would even play that position. I don't even know who else they would have filling in for.
They threw in Reyna. Yeah, they threw, I don't know if to play forward, but they threw in Reyna after.
Yeah, they threw in, I mean, I can understand their lineup going in. They were hot, stay with the same players, but they took out a bunch of creative players, and that just, they were just on with their stuff. They ruined themselves, made it harder for themselves.
I wanted to bring up another point. I think Dortmund didn't test those CBs enough, dude. Alaba and Boateng, who's always prone to make a mistake. Haaland was just too alone up top, and there was never nothing there. At least for me, I feel like that's Bayern's weak point, is their Boateng. All crazy. He's still pretty good, don't get me wrong, but I think he doesn't come out playing with the ball very well, and not very fast either. Alaba is just not a natural center back, but he can definitely play it. But I don't know. They're a good team. And then to help his point, it's kind of like they're already getting into form. So team, depending when Champs even starts, like I don't think 10 games will be enough for them to like man, they won so much that they're going to lose now, you know, or even if they drop a game or two, how we're saying they got 7 points ahead, probably they can drop one. But by the time the other teams come back, dude, Bayern will have already have played a whole month to, you know, that with the players have their feet under them and stuff, and other teams are still going to be like searching for condition and kind of just form rhythm of play. So that could be to their advantage, right? Because I heard that the Spanish league isn't going to start how they thought on the 15th or whatever, that they're going to push out.
They're pushing for June 11th.
I heard that's pushing out too, though.
The Premier League they were planning for June 12th, and they said they're pushing that back for sure. So, a lot of question marks.
That means, Bayern will have played a whole month before these other teams even get on the pitch.
Yep,
great point. That could definitely work to Bayern's advantage.
I think for those knockout tournaments like Champions, it always comes down to who's gonna score in the big moments, and Bayern has a lot of options to score. Kimmich, I mean, came up today and he's not even a goal scorer. It wasn't Lewandowski, you know, it was Kimmich, In other games, Pavard, you know, they're right back. In other games, it's Mueller, it's Narby scoring, you know, hat tricks in Champions League. They have so many weapons, bro. It's just hard to not see a goal from them. I mean, unless you're Atletico Madrid, maybe, but I don't know. I don't know who else might stop a offense like that.
Your boy Laporte back at Manchester City.
Or unless you go on a gung-ho type match, you know, Man City just 4-4 goals, you know. I mean, they're very Liverpool-esque, whereas everyone can score. And that was besides Liverpool, I think there were one of the other teams where they were getting goals from all positions. So.
From all positions. Well, yeah, that about wraps up the Bundesliga this week. Again, for this match day, which is match day 28, there's still a couple matches tomorrow, including Leipzig playing Berlin, which is one of the ones that will be Hertha Berlin, one of the ones that we'll be picking at the end. So if you have, I think it's on FS2 tomorrow here in the States in the afternoon. Unfortunately, it's not on FS1. It's either FS2 or Fox Soccer Channel. So you can catch Leipzig if you have either of those channels, because they may be the only team who might be able to charge at Bayern. But as we just went, like we just went into it at length, highly unlikely, right? And then before we do make our picks, a little bit on the shorter side today. This last week, guys, for those of you who don't know, I studied history, and I'm kind of a history nerd. This last week was anniversaries for a lot of important historic football moments. The first one I want to highlight, forget exactly now, and I didn't write down what day exactly, but in the last week, it was the 10-year anniversary of Inter's treble-winning team. Since Mourinho led Inter and Wesley Sneijder, Samuel Eto'o, Javier Zanetti, right, to a treble. That's the Serie A, Coppa d'Italia, and the Champions League, right? So, you guys, what are your memories of that team, right? We talk about treble-winning teams a lot, right, because there's five or six now, right, that have won the treble in the modern era. But I feel like that team is really underrated. For the pieces that it had, and then for Mourinho doing what he did. Again, what do you guys, what do you remember about that team? Or how do you remember that team?
Well, my memory is the infamous Barca win, or the win against Barca where...
At the Camp Nou?
Yeah. I mean, that team was something else. I mean, Samuel Eto'o went from one treble-winning team to another treble-winning team, the only player to do so. They were just clicking. I mean, Mourinho is I think that was his prime moment as a manager, I feel. Well, he doesn't agree, but I feel like that was, like, wow. Like, he really took Inter, of all teams, to the heights, you know, the top of the heights. So, yeah, I mean, Milito, Sneijder, those guys were playing out of their minds. Yeah, great team. I have nothing, no knock about them.
Yeah, Lucio, yeah. You're back.
Yeah, it was a stacked team. I don't know. Stankovic, they had Quaresma, Sneijder, Milito. I just remember the final. I don't even remember the Barca game that much, but Milito kind of just, like, two pretty clutch finishes. And that was all she wrote. And I don't know. I like Inter a lot. Dope jerseys. I kind of remember that they swapped Zlatan for Eto'o. And then it was kind of like Zlatan could have gotten one that year had he stayed, you know? I mean, yeah. Quote unquote. But because he's never won one, you know? And Eto'o won two in a row. So he's not. But.
Awesome. And that's why I'm glad I asked you guys, because both of you guys just brought up two things, right, that people forget now. Granted, it's been 10 years. Holy crap. I remember watching that in my basement against Bayern. But you're talking about Eto'o, right, Andres, winning back-to-back trebles. First of all, nobody ever talks about that, right? I know I always talk about Messi winning two trebles, but nobody ever talks about Eto'o winning back-to-back. That's crazy, right?
Yes, African player or would you say is the greatest African player?
I would say Eto'o, but I'm a little bit biased because of the Barca connects. I'll put that out there. Other than that, I know the other one, the other big one that's been thrown up there is Drogba, right? And some people even throw it back even farther. Some people say George Weah, right, who won a Ballon d'Or in the 90s when he was playing at AC Milan. So I don't know. And I would say Eto'o. I'm gonna be I'm gonna stay consistent and say Samuel Eto'o. And then the other big thing with what Johnny said too is the swap, right? We forget that Ibra swapped Barca for Inter, and that's what led to Eto'o going the other way. I think it was Eto'o in like 65 mil, right? That went the other way, but huge, right? Those are both an underrated stat of Eto'o's and an underrated just transfer market, just genius, right? That ended up paying big for Inter, because I remember that season, particularly what you're talking about, Andres, where I think it was Inter went 1-3-1, right? Or 2-1 at home?
2-1, I think.
2-1, right?
Or 2-1, I think. No, it was, like that.
Yeah, it was 3-1, and then they held Barca to 1-0 at the Camp Nou, but they were down a man, right?
Messi missed the penalty. I think that was the biggest moment.
And then Mourinho was running onto the field in celebration, right? It was pretty impressive. And yeah, considering all the players that they had, Zanetti is one of my favorites. I'm partial to players who wear the number 4, but he played the right back. He could play the center defensive mid. I like to think I could do those things too. So Zanetti is my boy.
Did he play until he was like 40 or something like that?
Yeah, no, he played for Inter for, man, like 20 years, bro. It was crazy. Almost that long. But yeah, Inter's historic side, it's been 10 years now. Look it up on YouTube. Some pretty good articles written about it now.
That team was just stacked. Some of the stuff, like the players, everyone I got on here, dude, everyone's like a legend almost. They had Zanetti, Stankovic, Lucio, Maicon. They even had, it's telling Balotelli on the bench, Walter Samuel, Chivu for a little bit. He had a stellar year. He was doing good. Cambiaso, bro. Yeah. Grimy ass Cambiaso. An old Materazzi. Materazzi.
Oh, yeah. Materazzi, yeah, the thug.
Sully Montari. That was Julio Cesar at the goal. And Savage as Mourinho leading all those guys. Yeah, that's a crazy team, now that I'm looking at it. But
good times. And then yesterday was another historic day. Yesterday was the 15th anniversary of the Miracle of Istanbul, where Liverpool went down 3-0 at halftime. Goals for AC Milan from Maldini, and then two from Crespo to put AC Milan ahead of Liverpool 3-0 at halftime, just so that after halftime, Gerrard scores a quick goal, Vladimir Schmeichel scores a goal, and then Xabi Alonso rebounds a penalty into the goal to make it 3-3, right? Just crazy. This is actually, for me, a special match because it's the first Champions League match that I was ever aware of. Like, I had always watched soccer, but obviously being a Mexican kid growing up in Chicago, it was like Liga MX, right? So I had never really known about European soccer. And then we started playing FIFA, and you started talking about Henri and Van Nistelrooy and Zidane and Ronaldinho. But that was the first Champions League that I was aware of. And for that to go down like that, 6 goals, first of all, extra time, and then PKs. Mind you, Liverpool finished 5th in the league that season. They didn't even win the league, but... another historic club with some big names, right? That are kind of forgotten. What about you guys? How do you feel about that team?
That AC Milan team, I think, is stacked.
Even more stacked, honestly, right?
It's like you see that stat sheet, and it's like, how did this team not win? Like, I mean, they were winning, but I mean, it's a miracle that Liverpool. I mean, to their credit, they had fighting spirit, and I think that's what Liverpool always had, like, you know, fighting spirit. That's what they always try to, even now, fighting, you know, against that Barca tie, but to beat that team, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's Steven Gerrard right there, captain. He really gave him that boost in the second half. And then I think there's a really good interview with Benitez, like one of his more recent ones, and he talks about all that stuff in depth with like Carragher, I think. And he just talked about he made a sub at halftime. But for me, I don't remember really seeing the game, but the thing that really stands out to me is just like, that's why you watch the Champions League, you know? Like, crazy shit always happens. Like, dreams come true, that they come true in the Champions League, you know? Like, even if you have, like, even, I don't remember, like, in the final, something always goes down. So for it to be like 3-0 halftime, you got to be kind of like thinking something's wrong. But I've always liked the Champions League because of that, and that was definitely one of the craziest ones. That's probably the craziest final ever. I mean, to be down 3-0 halftime and you come back to win. Yeah.
Against legends, against right?
Against that team. That's why it's like, that's what really puts Gerrard above, I think, a lot of the times when people talk about him. You know, he has that winner's mentality, because I think Liverpool, obviously, they've never won the league. They were always, like, in the top four, but it was just right there. Shows you how strong the English league used to be. Or, I mean, still pretty strong, but, like, back then.
Yeah. Quick shout-out to Steve Q, who's watching and interacting with us live. He agrees that was a badass team. And is quick to remind, don't forget, that's right, they had a rematch in the Champions League final 2 years after that when they played in 07. Pippo Inzaghi scoring twice to beat Liverpool. I think it ended up 2-1. But AC Milan got their seventh Champions League 2 years after that with pretty much the same team, right? So those guys got their trophy eventually.
Didn't their owner sell the team? Is that why they went on the downfall that hard, or was it just mismanagement?
Yeah, I talk about this with Ryan frequently too. It's just we grew up in a time where the Premier League and Serie A were going back to back, right? As just top, right? We're talking about Inter, the Inter of Ronaldo, the real Ronaldo, right? Yeah. We're talking about the AC Milan of that we're just talking about. So to see where those teams are now to where they used to be, yeah, financial mismanagement. I think there was obviously a trend in European soccer, right? And I don't want to say give Pep and Barcelona too much credit, right? But or maybe just Spanish football, right? Because they won the Euros and then the World Cup as well. But I feel like the tactical tweaks and changes that were going on in the world just kind of made it so that Italy, I don't know, Italy's always been tactical and slower, right, and more defensive. So I feel like it just got tougher for teams, and then competition within the league got a little bit worse because, again, to their credit, Roma and Napoli challenged for a little bit recently to Juve in the last couple of years before they tailed off too, right? And now we have Lazio who could potentially challenge. So, all that from from Liverpool in 2005 all the way to AC Milan.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up something to kind of come full circle with that. So much history in that stadium, or not there, but AC Milan's home stadium in Inter, the San Siro.
Yeah.
And they're talking about they're going to demolish it already, right?
Yeah.
That's been in the news a lot, that they're going to turn it down and make a $1 billion stadium. But that's crazy because of, like, what you're saying. Back in the 90s, the Italian league was so great. There was, like, the four big teams, you know, kind of like the Premier League is now. Yeah. And it was, like, that's why I always watched it, AC, Inter, Roma, and all that. But they're just down to let go of the Well, the San Siro, right? I read an article that they don't deem it of cultural interest, so they're like, we're down with just knocking it down and making a new one.
That's sad, because it's definitely is of cultural and historic significance. And yeah, that was the anniversary of that match. Excuse me, was yesterday. Now today is pretty historic in football as well. Today is the anniversary, first of all, two big anniversaries of the 99 Manchester United treble winning squad, the first of the modern treble winning squads, right? And there have been whole movies dedicated and made to the story of the class of 92, right? And how they were able to come through adversity and win the FA Cup with that Ryan Giggs solo goal against Arsenal, right? Then they won the league. And then they were losing to Bayern Munich 1-0 in the Champions League final when in stoppage towards the end, right? Stoppage time almost. David Beckham puts in a corner that Sheringham scores, right? Teddy Sheringham, if I'm not mistaken. I know Solskjaer scored.
Sheringham and then Solskjaer.
But crazy, right? And in the dying minutes of the match, from 1-0 down to 2-1 champions of Europe and treble winning squad. Again, 99, I was 8 years old. So, and in America, I don't think we got that on TV. So I don't have any memories of watching it. But again, as a both history nerd and football nerd, I definitely watched as much as I can about this. And because again, it was historic, right? To be losing to big team like Bayern, and then just out of the nowhere, David Beckham, right, with the crosses, right, to put his stamp on history. And then, I mean, Fergie, I would argue, is easily the best manager of all time, right? And to have that too on his CV is crazy. And it all in Barcelona. That all happened in Barcelona as well.
Yeah, at the Camp Nou, I was going to say that.
Crazy stuff there too, because Scholes and Keane, two of United's key players, didn't play the final. I know Keane missed the final through suspension because he played one of the best games of soccer ever played against Juventus in the semifinal and then accumulated too many yellow cards. And then Scholes, he missed it too. But they won it regardless, right?
Yeah, Beckham played the CM role next to Butt.
Yeah, and then Peter Schmeichel with the Captain's Armband. Another, you want to talk about historic clubs? You really got to have a big team to do something like that, man. And we're talking about York and Andy King up top, right? Or Andy Cole, I'm sorry. Getting my players mixed up. Cole and York up top. Beckham and Scholes. Keane in the middle, right? Or Beckham in those days too, right?
Jab Stam.
Oh my God, yeah. Jab Stam. Man, what a squad too. The Neville brothers in there as well. Just a big, huge achievement for Manchester. And then just really kind of set them up for the next decade, right? Because after that, they just dominated everything, right? Won the Premier League or have won it 13 times total now, right? And then Fergie wouldn't go on to lift another Champions League until 08, right? Yeah, 08 when they beat Chelsea. So that was pretty historic. Now, something that saddens me a little bit, but nonetheless historic and something that needs to be mentioned. 7 years ago today, on this very day, Cruz Azul was winning in the Liga MX final to be crowned champions for the first time in over a decade. When out of the fucking nowhere, Club America scores two goals to send it into extra time and then win on penalties. One of the most epic comebacks. I like to think of it as a historic collapse. But man, honestly, even just talking about it right now is making me hurt.
the most historic collapse.
Oh my God. Moy Munoz fucking with the, he could score the header, the goalie. Oh man, I don't know.
I remember because I was with you that day, and we were going to Pito's graduation shit.
Yeah, we were at Pito's graduation party, watching it all unfold.
Fuck Iowa, though.
Right before our eyes.
Yeah, fuck Iowa. But we went over there, and we were kind of streaming the game on the phone. Remember? And Frankie, being the biggest Cruz Azul fan, like, I didn't give a fuck about the final. Probably the two teams I hate the most, Cruz Azul and then America. And then they were winning, and we're like, they got this, bro. They had a stacked team. Remember? Cruz Azul did? The forward, beastly forward.
Pavone. Estanque Pavone.
Yeah, dude. And I was like, they got this.
From Colombia?
Yeah. And then it was like, they were leading, and then we were getting to Pito's place, so we're like, they probably just won, you know? We're just going to go inside and then just celebrate for Frankie, I guess. And then we go inside, and apparently they freaking gave up a goal. And then on top of that, then they let the freaking Moy Munoz score a freaking header. It was ridiculous. I don't know. You can't write shit like that. And that was a crazy day. And then they lost in penalties.
I would say you can't write stuff like that, but you can for Cruz Azul, right? And it's now even a verb. I think it's in the Spanish dictionary, right? When Cruz Azuliar, when you blow it.
This year, who was in first place when La Liga got, or when Liga MX got?
That's out of their control. Cruz Azul was in first place when Liga MX was canceled last week.
First place. Man.
Didn't that give Piojo his first trophy?
Yeah. Yep, that was Piojo Herrera's first trophy. Yep. Painful. You hate to see it. But yeah, that brings us to...
That's where the Super Saiyan memes come out of.
With the crazy memes in the rain?
Yeah, and then he went on to coach Mexico, and now he's arguably the most successful Mexican coach currently available.
Yeah, he wants to go coach in Europe, he says. We'll see about that. I don't know if he can do it. What do you think Piojo can do it in Europe?
I think he can, but he's going to have to take a pay cut. He's going to have to put himself in a small team.
he's the Mexican Antonio Conte.
Yeah, I can see it. He developed the whole 3/5 at the back thing. He would play like a 5-3-2 or like a 3-5-2 or whatever.
But yeah, just to kind of wrap up for this episode, our picks for the Bundesliga. There's four matches because there's a couple tomorrow and then they go again this weekend. Now bear with us here because some of these matches, again, on paper may not seem the most thrilling or the most exciting, but I watched a match this last weekend, Cologne versus Dusseldorf. Dusseldorf was up 2-0. And with like 2 minutes left, Cologne scores two headers and ties it 2-2, right? Today, Freiburg was up on Frankfurt and the match finished 3-3. So honestly, the Bundesliga is one of those matches where regardless of what you're watching, like you're going to be entertained. There's going to be goals no matter what. This Bundesliga right now isn't like your 0-0 league.
It's the highest scoring league.
Yeah, so bear with us. Tomorrow, to kind of maybe sort of keep some pressure on Bayern, Red Bull. I'm sorry, they're not really Red Bull, but they're associated and they're owned by Red Bull, so I'll always call them that. Leipzig plays Hertha Berlin. Berlin's been on a little bit of a tear recently. Who you guys got?
Didn't Hertha just win the Berlin Derby?
They did. They've won a couple matches in a row now.
They won. They look like they gave Bayern more of a test than Dortmund, to be honest, in that first game.
No, that was Union Berlin.
Union? Oh, okay. Yeah, Union Berlin, sorry. Wrong team. Regardless of the fact, it was a good Berlin derby. I think it was 4-0. So,
yeah.
Man, I want to say Timo Werner with a hat trick. And that whole team, they keep it up. Right, for Leipzig. So I'm gonna take Leipzig for the win. I went against them last week and that didn't go too well, so I think they remain hot. So I got a win for Leipzig.
I'm picking Leipzig as well. What about you, Johnny?
Yeah, me too. I was trying to look up anyone I recognize. I only recognize Marco Grujic. Is that the Liverpool guy?
It is. Or Liverpool.
He's not. Did they sell him?
I think they did, but they have a buyback clause on him.
Yeah, I don't recognize anyone on there. But yeah, I mean, RB all day.
They do have, what's his name? Piatek, right? Christoph Piatek.
Oh, that's where he went.
Yeah.
Oh. Wow. I remember he should have gone to freaking Tottenham, man.
They have Mateus Cunha, who's this prospect. He scored some golazos recently. He scored the goal of the season last year in the Bundesliga. He did the little roulette turn on the guy before he chipped the keeper. I know you guys have seen that one. But yeah, Berlin's been kind of strong the last couple weeks, but clean sweep. We all got Leipzig. I'm glad you brought that up on this because we've somehow neglected to mention the fact that Timo Werner scored a freaking hat trick for Leipzig over the weekend in a 5-0, right? It wasn't even.
Yeah, but it was really suspect defending. Like, there were free headers. I mean, Werner just had, like, tap-ins. Good team move at the end, but I would hope they have more team moves on a team like Berlin to get the win.
So, yeah, Werner, look out for that kid. He's at the top of the charts there, too, kind of pushing Lewandowski in the Bundesliga. So, definitely want to keep an eye on him. And Leipzig, granted, like Andres said, suspect defending, but a lot of attacking options from Leipzig as well, and they play fast. On Friday, we have kind of important matchup for European spots, Leverkusen versus Freiburg. Who you guys got?
Again, I don't know no one on this Freiburg squad. I mean, I'm going to go the obvious.
Yeah, I'm gonna say Leverkusen because they rebound, right after this loss today. To Wolfsburg,
bad loss,
4-0, yeah. Right? They got blown out, but
3-1, I think.
Freiburg is one of those teams that's kind of in the middle of the table today. Freiburg scored 3 goals, so I think they can put up some goals. It can, man. I might even be leaning a little bit towards tie, but I want to say Leverkusen rebounds.
I'm gonna go for the tie.
The draw?
Cool. The draw. I think Freiburg has enough to draw teams, and maybe after a bad loss, maybe, I don't know, maybe there's some more problems underneath that Leverkusen are addressing. So I don't know if they'll completely rebound, but they do have Kai Havertz. So.
They do. And again, Freiburg has been putting in the goals lately. They scored 3 today and a couple on the weekend, too. So could be a fun one to watch. On Saturday, Wolfsburg, who won today, plays Frankfurt, who also scored 3 goals, but lost to Bayern over the weekend. You guys got Wolfsburg or Frankfurt?
I got Frankfurt.
I'll go Frankfurt too.
All right. I like Frankfurt's team. They have Andre Silva still playing up top. Pretty much almost the same team minus Luka Jovic, right? Luka Jovic left. I think they lost one other striker, Haller. He plays at West Ham now. So I think this one could be good, too. Wolfsburg, again, went from losing to Dortmund to blowing out a pretty decent Leverkusen team. So you know what? I'm going to go with the draw for this one. Talk myself into it. And then finally, the last Bundesliga match of the weekend on Sunday, Dortmund versus Paderborn. Paderborn, if I'm not mistaken, is bottom of the table. But Dortmund needs to respond somehow to maintain some sort of pressure on Dortmund. I'm sorry, Bayern. So who do you guys got there?
Dortmund, especially. Yeah, they are last place, Paderborn.
I'm assuming clean sweep. Everybody got BVB to rebound. Kill the bees.
I mean, I want to play devil's advocate and say they tie, but I mean, Royce might be back. Haaland might just be a small knock. Hopefully everyone just, you know, puts this behind them and just hopes Bayern slips up and just, you know, try to get some wins. So, yeah, I got Dortmund winning.
Cool. And that pretty much wraps things up for us this week. One thing that I did kind of forget about talking about, a lot of people that I saw online going back to Dortmund and Bayern briefly, were calling a penalty for Dortmund. You guys know which one I'm talking about, right? When Haaland took that shot and he went off Boateng's arm, is that a penalty for you guys?
I don't remember seeing that.
Haaland got a good ball that he received in the box, and then he one time left footed to go far post. And it went off of
Boateng to go. Well, where's that VAR, bro? Haven't heard no VAR talk, right?
Well, I heard that part of the reason why they didn't use it was because Dortmund took the corner so quickly. So it sounds like if it was a handball, the Dortmund players weren't even aware that it was a handball. So they just kept it moving and we're keeping it moving quickly. So you don't think it was a handball, Andres? Of course not, right?
I'm sorry. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at it right now, and it definitely looks like a handball. He put out his whole elbow.
If we're looking at VAR and we're in the VAR era, that's a VAR penalty, yes. I'm not sure why it wasn't checked, and I'm not sure why VAR wasn't used. Even during the game, I don't even think I saw any VAR. Did you see any VAR decisions during the game?
No.
So I don't know if they just opted to not use VAR during this game, but that was definitely a VAR penalty. Because Boateng was on the floor and he just turned, made himself bigger, and it hit his arm. And we've seen penalties given for a lot less. So that was a penalty, but I mean, I guess VAR was not used for that occasion.
Cool. So a little tinge of controversy there on Der Klassiker. Maybe something for you guys to mull over. But again, that wraps it up for us this week. Don't forget to check in with us next Tuesday. At around 8:30 Central Time here. Bear with us again. Sometimes things happen. Sometimes we have technical difficulties in this COVID world. So bear with us. But Tuesdays at 8:30, and we'll get you caught up on Bundesliga, as well as Project Restart everywhere else in Europe, and that status. If you're into football, subscribe to not only this podcast, but Full Heel podcast in general. For those of you guys who aren't aware or are new, Full Heel podcast started as a combat sports podcast that our good friend Rafa does. And we've kind of taken it to add football, and it's still mostly combat sports. So if you guys are into UFC, Rafa and the gang, myself included, sometimes do fight companions whenever there are UFC cards, whether it be a fight night, whether it be a pay-per-view. We try to do those as frequently as we can on Saturdays, sometimes with boxing too. Johnny and Rafa here know their boxing and have been known to go in on the big fights, the big heavyweight fights recently. And then Sundays, if you're into pro wrestling, AEW, NXT, WWE, all that stuff, Rafa and the gang break those down, as well as go over some classics. So subscribe to Full Heel, and if you're into combat sports, UFC, wrestling, as well as football, check us out weekly. Again, Tuesdays for football, UFC on Saturdays, and wrestling on Sundays. Peep it. And thanks again for watching. Thanks to Steve Q. Thanks to my boy Tucan for chiming in. Thanks to everybody who shares and responds. Let us know what you guys think. Share with your friends if you guys think we're worth listening to. And stay safe and healthy. We'll see you guys next week.
Peace.